This episode of Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation is brought to you in part by Clay Boykin Life and Business Coaching, because we all get stuck at times. For more information, visit clayboykin.com. By Janelle Bean, for fun and engaging children's books with cute and colorful characters. For more information, visit janellebean.com. And by Wise Owl Organizing, simply set up for you. Organizing, consulting, and clarity coaching, virtual or in person. For more information, visit wiseowlorganizing.com.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and welcome to a Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation with Sarah Kogan. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be with someone who creates worlds. And this is what I love about what you're talking about, where you, because of your design and the working into the in the industry, you create worlds for us. And one of your films, one of your latest films is 18 and a half, right?
Yeah.
Well, you had to create, this is about the Watergate. And so you had to create this, you had to create the time back in 1974. So
yeah.
You had to create that time, and you had to create, so delving into that, how do you get there to create the kind of atmosphere that makes us be so real when we get a chance to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So how do we make the worlds we see on screen real? For me personally, it's all about texture. So it becomes about what are the textures of the world and how do we see and experience them? And how does that then lend itself, right? The textures that we experience in the 70s are very different textures than, you know, what we have now. And so it was really, that's where my kind of gateway point is, you know, and I tend to be very drawn to texture because it also physical texture and visual texture have a light reflecting quality to them. And then that allows your clothes to kind of play in with what is happening with the cinematography and the gaffer and the lighting that's being done for the film. And so I really look to play on that. So for me, it was about what are the textures, you know, what are the clothes, you know, right behind me right now, this is Connie from the film and her signature outfit. And just playing in with different texture on texture. And you really see that in the 70s, especially, you know, not just visual texture, but also physical, tactile texture on texture. And so that's kind of how one of the ways that I really dug in, as well as, you know, the director, Dan Mirvish, and I talked about a lot of like, what are the film and the writer, Daniel Moya, we talked about what are the films that influenced the script and what was the visual feel we wanted. And so then I just took a deep dive into, you know, 3 Days of the Condor, All the President's Men, and then like a bunch of Cassavetes films and all these other 70s, really 70s gritty films that we then kind of brought, you know, to the film. And so that was really how I kind of jumped in. It's from the texture standpoint.
Did you work with, okay, so you have your character. Now she has mm-hmm. to have a character. So do you study her from the script and to say this would be her backstory on why she would choose this particular outfit, why she would choose, what is it about our personality? Because what mm-hmm. we wear are our outer feathers, right? The feathers mm-hmm. that create, that react. So how did you get into her head?
Yeah, I love that term, outer feathers. Oh, that's so good. It started with a dialogue, right? I read the script, and as a costume designer and as a film designer, what you're doing is you're playing detective. And so you're looking at the script to say, what here tells me about the characters? What here gives me insight to who they are and why they are making the choices they are making? And then from there, I go, okay, I read the script. Here's the emotional arc I'm seeing. Here are the things the character's kind of saying to me. Hey, Dan, what do you think? You know, is this, you know, the director, like, what do you think about this? This is where I'm kind of going. And oftentimes I'll talk about like how closed off are they as a person? How open are they as a person? Are they hiding something? If they're hiding, you know, and then also, so from a psychological standpoint, right, we make hundreds of for like decisions about a person and judgments about a person in the first few seconds of meeting them, right? Everyone says you never have a second chance to make a first impression, right? And so knowing that, the question I always ask is, what's the first impression we want to give, right? Who do we want people to think this person is, especially like an 18 and a half where no one is who they present themselves as. And so if that's the case, what do we want? Where do we want to take them so we can then have like the audience, them being the audience, to then flipping that and opening it up to be a reveal? So it becomes a lot of those questions, as well as also based on what's the world this person's from, right? Connie, for example, in 18 and a half, is she's a government transcriber. Right. So she's going to be playing more on the conservative path. Right. She's more traditional in her style and aesthetic. Right. And so we did a lot of 3-piece outfits. So vests and skirt. I say a lot. Yeah, she had 2 outfits in the whole film. But that was the choice for those reasons of this kind of secretary style kind of working woman. And so that informed a lot of like her outfit, for example, whereas Paul, who is who is a reporter for the Times, is they're meeting in this kind of backwoods town. And I dressed him a lot like, you know, the reporters of the 70s and like Bernstein and how, you know, the guys who broke the story on Watergate and really looked into them. So that was where his inspiration came from, for example.
How exciting. And this is a big film for you. It's a big step in your career as you're developing. Are you feeling that momentum moving in your career? Are you feeling this as an important stepping stone?
I'd like to say yes. It's exciting to get to say I'm in a film that's being considered for the Oscars that I designed, and there's a lot of buzz around the film for its song, so I know that more people are going to see the film and see my work, and that is exciting. You know, that's always the challenge. It's interesting because the challenge for indie designers and the next generation of designers, and this has become really clear going through this process with the Oscars and with this film, is that there aren't very many places for designers to get accolades. So you have all these film festivals around the country and around the world, and they all go, you know, best film, best director, best actor, best script, nothing on the design front. Even the Indie Spirit Awards, the Gotham Awards, nothing along the design front.
Why?
And I'm not sure, to be honest. And it's actually, I think, part of why I started all my courses is like, there's a big devaluing of designers in the industry. If you look at film schools and what they focus on the top 5, right? So, which is above what we call above the line. And so it's the director, the producer, the writer, the actor, and the cinematographer, right? These are the people that are focused on whenever people interview about a film, talk about a film. 18 and a half got an insane number of reviews, and majority of them only talked about those elements. And yet, I always tell people, it's what goes in front of the camera that makes the cinematography amazing, right? A blank wall is a blank wall. No, it doesn't matter how amazing you are. Exactly. You're not going to make it look amazing if that's all you have.
And if I can't be immersed in the reality, if I can't really get a sense of I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
What's the story?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I love that you said that, because what you're talking about right there is context. And again, it's that psychological thing. Like I've been really advocating for design and looking at the psychology behind it as kind of the why it matters. We understand our worlds, this is a Herbert Zetzel quote, we understand our world not in absolutes, but rather in ever contextual, like changing contextual relationships. So it's based on, right, how you frame the story, the world around the characters, the way that they are dressed in relationship to the world changes everything. You can have the exact same script with the exact same cast, with the exact same camera shots. And if you change the design elements, you completely change the context of the story. Perfect example. Like, let's say you have a lawyer walking into a bar or into an office or insert anywhere. A lawyer walks into a room. Now, if this lawyer walks into the room and he goes, give me the files. If they're dressed in a well-fitted suit, let's say it's a navy with maybe a slight pinstripe. They've got a burgundy tie on, three-piece vest, you know, slick shoes. Their hair is neatly groomed. You're like, this guy knows what he's doing. Now, your experience of the same lawyer walking into the room, right, going, give me the files, and he's wearing a brown suit that's a little too big. His tie is a little rumpled. His shirt collar is not fully pressed and starched. And, you know, he's wearing loafers and maybe the tie is more of like a green, right? And he's wearing this brown suit. Which lawyer are you going to hire? Yeah. Right. And it has to do with how we perceive people. Same action, same line delivered, could be even delivered in the exact same way. And your experience of that person is completely different.
Totally.
And that's the context, right, that we're talking about and why design matters in telling these stories. So, yeah, so I've become an advocate for design and its importance in storytelling and in this process going, okay, well, we need to find more ways for young designers to get advocacy or to be elevated in the industry, because those awards matter for things like getting an agent, which is part of representation, which then helps you to get in the room on larger budget films and larger projects, right? It's the awards give you that gold star on your resume that might just put you to the top of it, right? And these are the things that really matter, you know, and you see it with, like, that's why you see all the laurels on the festival posters and on film posters, because it's to say, see, look, all these people said we were, right? We are worthwhile. You should too. And so, you know, that's, I think, what's so important about awards. And, you know, and so I'm realizing, like, there's just not anywhere for designers. And I think it's because nobody teaches about it and nobody puts it up as a value at all.
Exactly. But that's what you're doing. So yeah, you're taking that mantle. Now, in your history, your story, Nadine Jolson, the wonderful Nadine Jolson of Jolson, who connected us, is said that you have a story about your father.
Yeah.
And I want to know about that. I want to know because we all come from roots, and we come from roots to be able to see where we're coming from. So I want to know that story. Would you please?
Yeah, it'd be my honor. So I am a costume designer because of a couple conversations I had with my father. His name's Michael Kogan.
Good.
And he is an attorney of all things. That's what he did. And, you know, family law, personal injury, definitely an advocate for the little guy. And when I was in college, I had lost my voice. I thought I was going to be a performer. Suddenly couldn't perform. And I was like, I don't know why I'm here in college, Dad. Like, I feel like we're wasting money. Like, I don't know what to do with my life. And everything I tried this last year doesn't work. And he goes, well, you always, you know, were backstage and on all the plays you did. And, you know, you made your own prom outfit and you painted all the sets. Somebody's got to do that for the shows in your college. So why don't you go check that out? Next thing I know, I'm in a meeting with the costume design professor. And my whole next year is planned out. I come back in the fall of my second year of college and immediately was like, this is it. This is where I belong. I love this. I had trained as a performer from the age of 6 until I was 18. I love character breakdown. That was my favorite part of acting. And so now I get to do that for like every character. And I think it's great because I get to talk about character beats with the actors and how they could maybe utilize their costume for it, right? Like, you know, I designed you with a hood on you because I thought, you know, for this moment you could lift it up because you're hiding, you know, or maybe it's about you're going to put your hood up because it's about security and feeling safe. And then when you're willing to be vulnerable, you take it off, right? Or when you want to be seen, you take it off, right? And so I get to work with the actors in that way that's really kind of integrated, you know, which I really love. So it started there with my dad. And then it was the end of college. And I was like, do I go to grad school? Do I not go to grad school? And he was like, you should go. I went to UC Santa Barbara for undergrad, which actually has a graduate style design program for undergrads. And so while I was there, they're like, you should go to grad school, Sarah, and you should look at UC San Diego, where I ultimately ended up getting my master's in fine arts in costume and lighting design. And again, it was a, you should apply now because you're the, I mean, I was like, you're at the top of the game in your class, you're doing really great things, so you should go now. And I lucked out because then the Great Recession hit. So I was in school and slightly protected from it, right? Which lucked out for me as a creative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that kind of furthered it. And then my father's just always been really fascinated by my career and getting to talk to me about why'd you make the choice you made and what's the thinking behind it and all of that. So he's just always been this big champion of mine. And then, I don't know. I feel like there are very few people that I've met that can say they know fully, wholly and completely that their father loves, trusts, supports, and is proud of them, you know? And he just did an amazing job of making sure I knew that. And, so fast forward, you know, we've always been talking career and next moves and all the things. And fast forward to last year, 2021. And, you know, I mean, my parents are the kind of parents that would shore me up when I'm like, I don't know if I chose the right career. Like, I love my career, but this isn't financial. They're like, just keep going. Like, you're doing great. You love this. It's worth it. We're going to make sure you know, we'd rather see like put things towards helping you succeed now than give you stuff later on in your life, right? So that's the kind of parents I had. And so I was really excited to share 18 and a half with my dad, because of course so much of what I have, I'm coming to you from my costume rental house in New York. And you know, he helped just support that dream in terms of just even like emotionally shoring me up. And so I'm getting ready to go to Woodstock Film Festival to watch the premiere of 18 and a half when I got a call from my mom. And my dad had a catastrophic brain bleed and wasn't going to make it. And so instead of going to Woodstock to see the film premiere, I instead went to Florida where my dad was visiting my aunt to say goodbye to him. And so on the day that 18 and a half premiered, my dad was taken off life support. And so it's for me this film where I go, man, I'm experiencing like that highest moment of my career right now, and the only person I want to share, like the person I'm so want to talk to about it, is my dad, you know. And I always wonder, you know, what he would have said about the film, what he would think about this crazy run that we had, and, you know, just kind of what he'd advise me to do moving forward with my career. And, you know, but so this film is kind of to be even put in for the Oscars with this film when it premiered on the day he passed, you know, is kind of amazing, especially because, you know, he's the reason I'm a costume designer.
I thank you for sharing that beautiful story. At 74, I feel my death very, you know, you carry your death with you and where we're going. But there's something about the experience of life that I feel is like a relay race. Like mm-hmm. Michael was able to take on and he took that baton and he put it in your hand.
Yeah.
And here you are going off with it. But there's always a continuity. I feel that his voice is still there. His love and support echo in the times when you have that dark night of the soul. Those kinds of things go on. Those kinds of things, that nurturing and support is something that is eternal. I feel it so strongly.
Oh, I love that. Yes. I think it's really true. And yeah, you say it so beautifully of the passing of the baton. And I do feel like he has given me these gifts that I will forever cherish and forever continue to ripple out. You know, I always think that we are echoes of the past that reverberate into the future. You don't know how your vibration, the way that the steps you take in the world, right, how they're going to then ripple out. And I feel like that's one of the things my dad definitely taught me. And that's
wonderful. And you're doing that now, though. You're doing that now with doing your classes and doing the teaching and helping to encourage and support the next, the continuing generation and the people that are doing this. Talk about that, would you please?
Thanks. I appreciate that. I have a deep, I teach filmmakers about basically how you can utilize design to amplify the story you're telling and how to make a cohesive cinematic experience aligned to your story, right? And by putting in the design in alignment and how that can have that impact. Because I always tell people, you know, that great film shot that you love or that sequence that you love from a film, look at all the elements in it. It takes multiple elements to make it happen. And what makes it great and amazing isn't just that sequence in and of itself, but its relationship to everything that came before it in the film and everything that comes after it. So how do you actually plan that out so that in the filming process that is so non-linear, right? We're going to shoot based on location or based on actor availability, we're going to go all over the place. And so if that's the case, how do you keep creative continuity during this very volatile process, especially when you're lacking sleep, when you're under a lot of pressure, and when resources often are getting tight at that point, right? They're getting squeezed. The money, by the time most people get to production, most of their money is spent because set design is happening, right? Set design, costume design, those happen before you get to set, and good hair and makeup has test sessions that are determining the looks of things before you get to set, all for the intention of making the set process, the process on set in production, smooth and easy, right? So I teach people, how do you make that happen? Utilizing all the elements, utilizing how we experience color and color theory, how we experience conflict visually, which is through contrast. And so the higher the contrast in a moment, the higher the visual conflict and the audience's perception of unrest. And so you can do that with a character in a scene, right? And them in direct contrast to the world around them. A great moment is an example of this in a color way is in Gone Girl, where Ben Affleck's character is in a blue button-down shirt and blue jeans. And everyone else around him is in these like yellow, ochre, tan colors. Blue and yellow are opposite on the color palette, right? So they're in direct conflict. And you know that something's not right here, because these two moments, they don't work, right? So how do we do that on a film? In 1917, I do a whole breakdown of the color theory in that it can even be like a whole segment scene being in an orange, like they have a whole scene that's lit by fire, and then a whole scene right after it, when he gets to safety, is then in blue, which is, again, the contrasting color. And like, you know, or almost contrasting color, right? So we're utilizing these, you can do it on a, you know, an element within a scene or a shot, essentially to a shot. And so how do you use that to then amplify your story and tell your story and make a cohesive film. And that's like what I'm really fascinated by, the process of it. So that's what I teach.
It is, but I think even more, you taste like a director. Like this is something I would love to see something you direct. I would love, this is, it's exciting to me to see the passion of the way that you talk about character and how it goes. I'm going to be very excited. There's something here that feels that is going on, Sarah, that I'm delighted that I've met you now in your career so that I can say, see what you did, see what you're doing now.
That's funny. It's funny you say that. I have started writing a book on exactly what I teach, you know, get the process out more affordably. I do workshops. I do them live as well as I have a pre-recorded one. And I started writing a book to make it more accessible for people and something that people can then have physically in their hands. And one of the only reason I didn't get picked up by this one publisher was because I didn't have enough cinematography experience, was their perception. And I was like, well, I guess I need to go direct a film. So, you know, that's definitely something that I have on my future. Nadine might be like, why'd you say that? But I want to be someone who is really helping craft the visual of a film from, you know, I think it's really why I'm looking at going into more visual producing, because I want to help filmmakers in that visual side. I understand costumes. I've done scenic and production design. I've done lighting design. When I trained for theater, which is where I got my start, as a costume designer, you're in charge of the makeup and the hair. So I learned all of that. So I can really talk about all the visual elements and even sound design, because I studied sound design. So I can talk about it on a ground level. And, you know, and so that's really why I want to help people to see the films that they see in their mind's eye and bring them to life. Like, how do you do that? And how do you understand that process? And so I think that's one of the reasons why I feel like I'm the person to do this, to champion designers, to, you know, bring it up about, you know, in the industry, there's the look for pay equity for the costume designers. I mean, yeah. And costume designers make about 60% of what a production designer makes. And, when you talk about women and equality, it's notoriously been a woman's role, and so it's been underpaid.
That's why you can afford to pay them 60%. That was the whole whole big bonus value.
Yeah, and I go afford. If we look at the number one single parent, right, the argument of men should be paid more because they pay for the household. Well, not if they've left the family. So then do we make constituents for that? Like, that's, yeah. You know, and so, you know, and with the market as it is now with costumes, you know, I mean, this is what I always told people. I'll know I've made it in the industry when people dress up as my characters for Halloween, because that's when you've permeated culture in a way that's really fascinating and interesting to me. Like, that's why I chose to leave theater and move to film and television. I love the pace. And also I want to exist at a higher cultural conversation. And, you know, and when you look at that, right, every time somebody dresses up as a character from your film, that is free advertising and it's social proof, right? So it's why cosplay has become so big for the film industry, because it's all about getting people to want to dress up as your characters, to be these characters, because the social buy-in says this is a valuable piece of intellectual property, right? And so now more than ever, this is why one of the reasons why we're seeing big blockbuster films be Marvel, superhero, you know, because they are a guaranteed win in terms of box office. And you have these followings of people who will then want to go out and dress it. And so I've worked with designers who talk about creating elements of their shows that are 100% built from scratch down to the buckle, so that if the film gets successful, if the franchise is successful, they can then turn that into licensable IP that they own to then be able to create product. So again, this is taking somebody who is paid a salary, an hourly rate, and then basically, right, so this is another part of the pay equity. They're not, designers don't get any bit of that IP.
They don't get
IP.
Any on the back end, none of
no.
The,
yeah. They get nothing on the back end. Costume designers get no royalties on a film unless it's negotiated in their deal. It is not a given. And so oftentimes people go, oh, you must make so much money because you work on big films. And I go, I make a great rate. And compared to other departments, no. And for example, in terms of this pay equity, I was on a job where the costume designer I was assisting had been designing for 10 years and had a ton of experience, an Emmy award-winning show underneath her belt. And the first time on a TV show, art director was making $1,000 more a week because it was the base minimum for that position. And so she was making $1,000 more on her very first TV show, having no previous TV experience, while somebody with 10 years of experience is making significantly less. And then the production, like, right? So there's this inherent, it's just like, it needs to change because, look, we tell stories about people. Costumes are about people. Yeah. They're about character design. They're about, how does the audience relate to that character? How do they see themselves in that character? Do they want to dress like that character? Do they, you know, the clothing can be one of the big reasons why people watch the show. Look at Sex and the City. It was what people went and talked about after the show aired. What do they wear? How do they wear it? Right? That was huge buzz for the show. And so, yeah. So there's this kind of, we need to start paying our designers on par with production designers because they are running an entire department. And that's me not even getting into safety.
Oh, so. Sarah, thank you. Thank you for having this conversation with me about both your work and your getting a chance to be able to expand and to expand your influence in there. I love the depth that you've taken it. You've given me a wonderful insight into you and what you're doing. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me and letting me just spout on about all the things I'm obsessing about these days. I really appreciate that.
Those are the things I love. Your obsession ends up giving so many people the opportunity not only to see it and because of your attention to detail, but also to be able to then expand it because your willingness to give back. Your willingness to take this and then to say, okay, now how can I spread it around? I mean, it is truly, that's one of the reasons why I feel that we get more women involved, because you teach a man and we end up having an educated person. But a woman, when you teach a woman, she goes back and teaches the village. And the village is what we're doing, because if we get that village going, that's where we're going to get the healings for this world, what we're going to be able to do for this collaborative world to be able to do that. And that's what you are. And I deeply appreciate having you and getting a chance to meet you at this time of your career and then get a chance to intersect with you as you go on down there. Okay.
I'd love that.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Sarah Kogan. Check out all the links that we have to all of Sarah's work. And thank you for joining us on Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation. And we will see all of you next time.
This episode of Reasonably Spontaneous Conversations has been brought to you in part by In Search of the New Compassionate Male. For more information, go to newcompassionatemale.com.